We've looked at already a particle we don't understand to a series of interventions which we're unsure about. Now let's turn to something we're certain about. We're certain about LDL, are we? And I'd like to ask my co-chair, Wolfgang Koenig, to actually introduce the subject of identifying new targets and monoclonal antibody inhibition of PCSK9, a novel regulator of the LDL's pathways. And really, to open up the question, we know everything about LDL, don't we? We don't need to. We can lower it more. Everyone, we can go further. Wolfgang.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Tony. This is my disclosures again. I must say, a couple of years ago, I thought we are done with LDL. I mean, it's certainly the pro-atherogenic lipid component that we use for risk stratification, identification of our high-risk patient. It's also the prime target in all the guidelines with regard to hyperlipidemic therapy. And there's abundant of evidence that LDL lowering is beneficial. And as you see in this CZT collaborators analysis from 2005, that by every millimole of 40 milligrams per deciliter reduction in LDL, you see a 23% reduction in major coronary events and a 21% reduction in major vascular events. And we also have solid evidence from quite a number of secondary and primary prevention trial, statin trials, is the incremental benefit of increasing statin dose on lipid levels and goal attainment has not been fully established. And I tried to show you just a few data based on the Voyager, the large database, to show you where we really see a deficit, and especially if our when our guidelines getting more stringent and more rigorous in terms of the target to achieve, and in the ESC guidelines, it now tells us everyone that has any manifestation of atherosclerosis in whatever vascular bed has to have an LDL below 70. Then it's still in the area of several potent statins, it may be difficult to reach the goal. And this is just some commonly used simvastatin, but certainly is somewhat weaker. And if you look into those who have an LDL, a baseline LDL below 130, and you would want to achieve an LDL goal of 70 milligrams per liter, then you're doing fairly well if it comes to these potent statins. In about 80%, you can reach that goal. This is obviously not the case with simvastatin. if you go a little bit further up between 130 and 160 baseline LDL, then you're the percent of patients in whom you can achieve the goal of less than 70 decreases. Now you're in the order of 60 to 70, or around 50%, and with simvastatin it goes further down as well. If you have then someone with an LDL above 160 and try to reach the goal of less than 70, then you're really in trouble, because even with the highest approved dose of rosuvastatin or atorvastatin, which is 40 and 80 milligrams respectively, you do see only a 30 or 20% patient achieving the goal of less than 70. The same phenomenon you see in diabetics, which are CHD equivalents and by this have to be treated according to guidelines similar to those with manifest disease, which certainly to some extent is debatable, as we have discussed also yesterday in the morning session. But what you see here in diabetics, you can achieve in the overall group with these potent statins in about a 50% or 40%, 30% patients to below the target of less of 70. If you be more specific and look into the baseline LDL, similar to the non-diabetic, you can reach the goal in 80% approximately. It decreases if your baseline LDL increases to, let's say, 70%. and 50% with atorvastatin. And again, what I've shown for the non-diabetic also applies to the diabetic. If you have those with high baseline LDL defined as above 160, then only in 40% of patients you can achieve the goal of less than 70 using the highest dose of rosuvastatin, and in 20% using the highest dose of atorvastatin. So that certainly calls for action if we really want to translate these guidelines to the general population and apply them. And one interesting concept, and I think we're focusing during the next 30 to 45 minutes on that, is PCSK9, which is pro-protein convertase, subtilisin caxin 9, pro-protein that has been discovered 10 years ago, and within a relatively short time frame of 10 years, we're coming from the detection to the first phase 3 trials. And I briefly focus on the background, the function, the genetics, and the role in LDL control, and also potential mechanisms. And then Dr. Scott will talk about clinical trial results. And I think it was very exciting during AHA this year to see so many studies presented with regard to PCSK9. Now, we know that the LDL receptor plays a crucial role in clearing LDL from the circulation. We know that the LDL particle binds with a receptor, which is then internalized into the hepatocyte in clathrin-coated vesicles, then fuses with endosomes, and is then... dissociates, and the LDL in the lysosome is degraded into lipids and amino acids, and the LDL receptor can recycle to the surface of the hepatocyte, being expressed again, and then start its function again in clearing LDL from the circulation. Now, what happens when PCSK9 is present, and PCSK9 is produced by hepatocytes, and it's secreted in a functional form, and it interacts with the LDL receptor. It's also internalized in these clathrin-coated vesicle, and it then is then degraded together with the receptor. And this certainly is not beneficial because it prevents the LDL. The LDL receptor from being recycled and being functional again. I'm skipping that one. So just to briefly summarize that, as I mentioned, PCSK9 has been discovered as a regulator of the hepatic LDL receptor only 10 years ago by Abi Fadel. And in plasma, it binds to the receptor, reduces recycling, effectively down-regulating the LDL receptor activity, and results in increased plasma LDL. And what I cannot go into detail is some genetic studies. First, when PCSK9 was discovered, it was discovered in the context of a family that had a gain-of-function mutation and with severely increased LDL and also increased atherosclerosis. And also interesting data from the Dallas Heart Study by Alan Hobbs and colleagues, who looked into this large population and found in about 1-3% loss of function mutations. And these loss of function mutations were associated with quite lower LDL and a reduced risk for coronary artery disease. Now, important in the context of PCSK9, and I think Dr. Scott will allude to that in his presentation, PCSK9 levels increase with statin treatment. But based on what I've said so far, I think it's an exciting new target for treating hypercholesterolemia and getting a sizable additional portion of our patients to target. It certainly will primarily apply to FH patients, but also to statin intolerant patients. And then if we go further to the still relatively large group of patients where we cannot achieve the target of less than 70 milligrams per deciliter. I can skip that one. still, there are a number of questions with regard to PCSK9. There are also different methods to targeting PCSK9, and Dr. Scott will allude to that as well. Certainly, we have to ask the question, how effective will a monoclonal antibody be, in particular long-term, so how long will that effect last? Will the antibody be effective in patients treated with statins whose LDL receptor are already upregulated? We have to discuss that as well. And as statins increase PCSK9 levels in plasma, if effective, will the LDL reduction be less or the same or enhanced than monotherapy? And in heterozygous familial hypercholesterolemia and an effective LDL receptor, will the PCSK9 inhibition have any significant effect? I think these are the main questions. And finally, obviously, what still has to be demonstrated, short-term results are very promising, but what about long-term safety and tolerability? Now, in ending my short presentation, I'd like to briefly present a case which I think is fairly interesting in that context. It's a 30-year-old male, not overweight, with who presented to the stroke unit in our hospital a few months ago with progressive exertional dyspnea, which during the past few days before admission, he had some flu-like symptoms and fatigue for several weeks, but no specific cardiac symptoms, no angina, no palpitations or syncope. And he was admitted to the stroke unit because of transient neurological deficit in the form of dysarthria and facial muscular impairment, which had already resolved upon presentation to the unit. And during physical exam, he showed regular rhythm, but was tachycardic, clear heart sounds, and in pulmonary auscultation, he had rails on both sides. ECG, besides the tachycardia and the left anterior hemi block, it was sinus rhythm. And interestingly enough, he had none of the classical risk factors except a positive family history. And as you can see here, his father died fairly early at the age of 38, that exactly at the same age as this patient presented to the hospital. Oops, now I'm having the same problem as the previous speakers. Okay, so this was the lab in terms of blood chemistry. Obviously, this patient had an infection. He had about blood cell count of 14.3 gram per liter and excessive highly high C-reactive protein of about 245. If you look, if you look at obviously a pathological oral glucose tolerance test, which was not known before, and if you look at the lipid parameter, obviously excessively high LDL, fairly low HDL, and similar what you would expect to see, a high ApoB and low ApoA1, and slightly elevated LP little a. He was not treated, and the hyperlipidemia was not known before, and he has not been treated with a statin. Now, interestingly, based on risk stratification, if you look at the ESC risk score for male, this patient, because of his low age, would have been classified or characterized to have a global risk for a fatal CVD of only 1 to 2% over 10 years. So he would not have been amenable for any intervention based on this low risk. Going further with what we have seen on admission in brain MRI, and I show you the images in a second, multiple ischemic loci in the area of the artery cerebromedia. The echo showed in the transthoracal approach a dilated left ventricle with a severely impaired left ventricular function and general hypokinesia, mitral regurg grade 2, and in the TEE, there were no thrombi in the left anterior, in the left atrial appendix, nor was there a patent foramen ovale. In chest X-ray pneumonic infiltrates and the preliminary diagnosis at the time of admission was acute myocarditis and pneumonia with multiple septic cerebral emboli, and the patient was treated accordingly, as you can see here, for his infection and also for the congestive heart failure. Now, the cardiac MRI showed a massive dilatation of the left ventricle, severely impaired ejection fraction with 19% global hypokinesia. Also, at that point in time, impaired right ventricular function. I already described the mitral insufficiency grade 2, then anterolateral septal, subendocardial, and apical transmural scar visualized by late enhancement and suspected apical thrombus. And then, surprisingly, during coronary angiography, he revealed severe three-vessel disease with occlusion of the LAD and circumflex artery with antegrade and retrograde collaterals and diffuse atherosclerosis of the right coronary artery. And obviously, in addition to the other treatment regimen I've shown you, this patient was put on high-dose statin. Now, this was the brain MRI, and you certainly will appreciate these ischemic areas here. The chest X-ray clearly indicates pulmonary congestions and pleural effusion. As you can see here, I don't have to go further. And this is the MRI taken 3 or 4 days after admission, and you certainly can appreciate a severely impaired left ventricular function in the two-chamber view and also in the four-chamber view, and that was quite surprising at that point in time. This is the late enhancement in two different views, and you can see that to a large extent it was subendocardial but also transmural infarction in that area. And most strikingly, if you would look at the angiogram, the left main stem was still unaffected, but you see it complete occlusion of the circumflex artery and also the LAD. And if you look at the right coronary artery, severely diseased with significant lesions in the peripheral arterial tree. Now, we also did some genetic analysis in these patients with regard to PCSK9. That brings me back to the topic, and LDL receptor gene. And what you see here, what we found, is some mutations that certainly may be relevant in the context of this case, because for PCSK9 and also for the LDL receptor, there were some mutations associated with high LDL, but also with severe atherosclerosis. So with this, I'd like to finish, and I think we have the discussion right after that to go into the clinical details.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang. A lovely presentation.